Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Port with me, John Arola, and very excited to say, and a surprise to the audience, a surprise this morning to him, Dan Evans. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hello, but you know what? Some things are wonderful surprises, happy accidents, things that were fate, really supposed to be happening all the time. Fate, such as a lot of the pieces that are falling in today's rundown, I think. You're going to see the fate of a lot of people who deserve the fates that are likely coming to them in real time. That's the news. Hi, everyone.
That's not, in case the FBI, that's not a threat. That's just a hypothesis and a prediction. But anyway, we had a bit of a scheduling difficulty, so Dan had no idea he was going to be on the show, and yet he's here on the show. What a nice guy, Dan. You host a billion things already, and you're joining us. Thank you.
No, it's always good to be here where I have some roots, let's say, and it's exciting to get to some stories now.
Nice, yes. Oh, and heads up, this is so behind the scenes that it's intended mainly for the producers. I don't know, do you guys know that Dan was a producer on the Damage Report? He was the first producer on the Damage Report, and now joining us as guest.
Inside job.
Exactly. It's all coming from inside the studio. By the way, I'm getting word that we're having a little bit of like stream difficulties. We're doing the best that we can. The TD and everybody are working in very difficult circumstances with the equipment that is not what they would prefer. It's not ideal. So apologies. Hopefully you can hear us. Hopefully it'll smooth itself out. But everyone is doing literally everything they can. And ideally, fingers crossed, we'll be back in the studio soon. It would be nice if it was today, but unfortunately it's not. So anyway, thank you all for being here. First of all, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that'd be great for reasons that remain thoroughly algorithmic. But we have a lot that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to start off the show with something fun, mainly just something fun I picked for Dan. I thought that he would enjoy it. And then a really surprising update on the Mar-a-Lago raid story. It may not be too significant, but we'll debate that. It definitely is not what I was expecting would happen. We got Sean Hannity with another own goal. That's going to be fun. Jared Kushner just like folding like an origami under a little bit of pressure from an interviewer. So that's going to be fun. Chick-fil-A, bad news for them. They've been such a great corporation up until this point, but they've made a couple of missteps recently. And then it will be a solo aftermath on the show today. Lindsey Graham, the worst political instincts ever. I'm going to give you all the details on that. And then we've got, prepare yourself, it's dramatic. We've got polls. No, but really, I understand this is such a me thing, getting excited about polls. But it gets into the psychology of what people think about America, about our politics. It's fascinating stuff. And so we're going to dive into it to close out the aftermath. But with all that said, Dan, are you ready to talk about some news?
Born ready.
Okay. Born ready. Let's do it. Let's jump into this.
This is a woman who lived with really incredible dignity her entire life, who was not supposed to be queen at the age that she became it. I mean, it's an absolutely incredible story, the abdication of the throne and her stepping into these responsibilities. And she lived with grace and decency. And we can all talk about whether a monarchy is worth it or not. And in some ways, I think right now we're seeing proof that monarchies have some value because they last over time instead of just the crazed sort of politicking of the day.
Okay, so that is Dave Rubin, and it's almost like the perfect Dave Rubin clip for a few different reasons. First of all of the other right-wing grifters and pundits got out their necessary knee-jerk pro-monarchy commentary like literally 3 or 4 days ago. Like, he's super late to the party, and he arrives, and if you're not going to be first, you're supposed to be best. And yet, while the earlier commentary from people like Tucker Carlson or Charlie Kirk, they actually accepted that this is an empire. They've done terrible things, but those terrible things were done to advance the interests of white people, and so they were good. So they would accept that, and they would cite it. Dave Rubin, like, he brought nothing. It's the vaguest substance-free nonsense. I guess it's good. I guess, it lasts. That's good. Not like democracy. While he's broadcasting from the oldest still functioning democracy in America, in the world, I should say. And so it's just such a, like, late to the party, brings no brains whatsoever, but he does have to imply that somehow having a hereditary dictatorship would be preferable in a way that he doesn't understand. But there it is, Dan. What do you think?
This is butter for me. I love this. This is the way I begin my mornings, and this is a lovely way to begin my morning. The way he advocates there for, you know, there is at least one good thing about monarchy is that, you know, it lasts over time, is certainly a take. Like, conservatives have gone full horseshoe theory from, like, okay, America is the best country on earth to, okay, now we have a lot of Canadian and non-American political commentators doing our dirty work for us to, okay, now at least monarchies are a better system than democracies because at least they hold and stand the test of time and, you know, can withstand cancel culture by canceling all of the countries that they colonized. It's quite a take even for Dave Rubin. It's once again showing another layer of the lack of history he has as an individual. But I think that's apparent to just about anyone else but him. This is, once again, one more time, a plea. I understand that you are, Dave Rubin, you're under so much pressure right now being a gay man on the right wing where everyone hates you. And the more you even mention that you are having the happy experience of having children, that they keep digging at you more and more and more. I'm just saying, not too late to become a double agent. It would be very funny. You could probably make even more money. But, like, just go in there. Get as far as you can and then expose it all. It's not too late. Maybe you'll redeem yourself a little bit. That's pretty much the only place you could go here because otherwise he's just digging himself in a hole. He can't find himself out of. There are no more ideas left to get himself out of that hole.
Amazing ideas. Definitely not. I might disagree a little bit in that I think he's still making tons of money. And the joke at the end of the day is on us in that he can make a bunch of money literally knowing nothing about politics. Like a guy who has done nothing but talk about politics for 6 years knows less than he did going into that period and yet lives in a mansion. So I guess the joke is on us. But I do like the double agent theory of it. It's really perfect. He is almost uniquely placed to do this, wherein the right wants fake leftists. They want fake progressives to come on their shows and say that they're actually right about everything. And Dave Rubin could do that because he was never actually really on the left or even what he would say a classic liberal. And you know the difference between a conservative and a classic liberal? I don't, and neither does Dave Rubin. But anyway, so it's easy for him to cross over to the right. It would be equally easy because they need that. They want a leftist who says that they're right about everything. But you know what? Like the center would want more is like a former right-wing pundit. Like how much would CNN want? Like, you know, the left doesn't care. The left has no interest in Dave Rubin. The thinking people have no interest. But like CNN or MSNBC, I bet they would love to have him come on and say that I've finally been awakened from my dabbling in MAGA. It would actually be, I think, a much better move for money, at least in the short term.
Maybe he is making good financial decisions. There's a large case to be made that he is. But if he wants to maybe align his morals better and stop digging the hole he's into, yeah, maybe become the next Larry King. Just do very moderate interviews, come to the show drunk and in denial about your marital situation. Then, like, go ahead. Just do whatever you want to do. I'm just saying that might be your best way out of here. Just go out with a bang, let's say. That's what I'd recommend. And again, we've all worked together before as friends. This is my honest plea out there. I'm not going to mock you too much. I'm not going to make fun of you too much. Just come back, Dave. We'll respect you. We will bake you wedding cakes. We promise you.
Exactly. Oh, no, I'm fine with the wedding cakes, but no, there's not going to be any respect. But anyway, oh, I also want to make one other point because it's sort of weird how politics works out sometimes. You remember, Pepperidge Farms remembers, a couple weeks ago when Joe Biden gave a speech that was super divisive where he claimed that the Republican Party didn't support democracy and all the Republicans were indignant. How dare you say that? And then they spent the next week talking about how great it would be if there was a monarchy and how a queen is better than democracy. And theoretically, it's better because it lasts a super long time, not like this democracy that changes all this. Well, Jesus, again, you're making his case for him. I just saw a story going around. Maybe we'll do more on it tomorrow about Blake Masters was asked in an interview, who do you think is an unconventional thinker that more people need to look into? And the person he chose to answer with that question was Kaczynski. So don't call them domestic terrorists, but they just think that some domestic terrorists have some pretty good ideas. Again, they're all making Joe Biden's case for him. We'll be right back. Anyway, with that said, we should get into more important, arguably, news. So let's transition to our B block here. A bit of a wild card in the Mar-a-Lago raid story. We knew that a special master was apparently coming, although there could be an appeal. The Trump campaign has put forward their preferred special master. And you know who okayed it? The DOJ. The Justice Department apparently filed court papers just yesterday saying, no, the one Trump picked, we're okay with that. And I find that fascinating. Now, let's dive into it. We can talk a little bit about what we know about this individual and figure out whether this is a good or a bad move on the part of the DOJ. So first of all, this person is not the special master yet. Judge Eileen Cannon will have to approve Raymond Deary. But bear in mind, Raymond Deary was chosen by Trump, and Eileen Cannon is just there to do whatever Trump wants. So I assume she'll be okay with it. Anyway, Deary is a 78-year-old, so young for D.C., still serves as a judge in Brooklyn Federal Court, albeit on senior status, which means he can take a reduced caseload if he chooses. Hey, respect the hustle. He was the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn back in the 1980s, a time when the office's workload was dominated by the pursuit of mobsters, gang leaders, and financial fraudsters, which topically seems relevant to this. Deary was nominated to the federal bench by Ronald Reagan, became one of, this is according to the Washington Post, most highly regarded jurists in the Eastern District of New York, previously served on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which oversees sensitive national security cases. All of this seems very relevant to the case at hand. That is to say nothing about what his stance on these things is. Having served on the FISA court is one thing. Having a stance that's pro or against, like, unrestrained government, like, executive power, I think is more relevant. I don't know at this point. I did some research. We couldn't find out that much detailed information about him. And so, Dan, I'm curious what you think. The fact that the Trump campaign would choose a guy and the DOJ would give a thumbs up to it, what can we draw from that?
We can draw that this is one of the unfortunate consequences of the real deep state, the thing that Trump and Republicans have tried to actually install, whether it's federal judges and court appointees across the board from different districts across the country, to their plan to basically have a switch, so to speak, should a Republican reach the executive branch in 2024 or later, where they're just able to mass fire a bunch of federal employees. There are all these different things they're trying to put in place so that basically they get to, even more so than, you know, laws essentially an extension of the white supremacist and male supremacist power structures in American society, it is an extension of further entrenching that for Republicans so that they can say, oh, well, we went to a court run by us and put together a law run by us, or like a legal precedent run by us, and we are going to approve that because it's in our interest. I mean, you already see this with legislation. You saw that Joe Manchin had a lobbyist for the oil and gas industry essentially writing parts of his legislation. So we all know about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, how they pass ideal legislation or draft legislation onto people who are in Congress. And then the people in Congress are so lazy that they even just leave the letterhead on there as they're trying to pass it underneath closed doors in Congress into different bills that try to make it into law. So we know Republicans operate like this. This just shows that they're going to do whatever they can to avoid accountability. And this is the stuff that we need to be on watch for. I'm glad Joe Biden called it out, but I, progressives, have been talking about this since Trump immediately got in office.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's a great point and overall great reasons to be suspicious going forward, not just about this, but also obviously be on guard for what a second Trump term would look like. I feel like he is going to be, I think, even more focused on prioritizing loyalty in the people he chose. I think that that was always there, but I think he'll be a little bit more cautious about that in this case. And also, they definitely have a more, I mean, they're making it super explicit that their focus is going to be destroying any potential checks inside of the government. You know, and if they had prioritized that in his first term, then January 6th and the run-up to the inauguration could have gone very differently. And they had apparently not prioritized that enough. In this case, it now falls to Cannon to decide whether Deary should be the special master. She also has to look into some of the specifics, like who's going to pay for the special master. I don't really care about that. And whether the review will include an examination of classified documents and whether to lift, at least temporarily, the judge's prior restriction barring the FBI from using those documents in its ongoing investigation. Let me just save you a bit of time there. She's not going to reverse her own decision that slows down the investigation. There is no chance of that. Some people are speculating that she will deny this choice of special master to draw it out. That feels needlessly, that feels too ridiculous to me. I mean, Trump's team chose this person. They seem, at least at first glance, to be well qualified. I have no idea about ideological predispositions that might influence what they would do. And the very idea that you would need a special master at all in this case is ridiculous. He definitely broke the law. We already know that. The only question, I guess, and I guess it's an interesting one, is how many dozens of times did he break the law? I think that I would love to know that, Dan. But other than that, I feel like a lot of this is largely a waste of time.
And the other question, no, I think the other question that is still out there is how far, I mean, part of the morbid fascination I got from covering the Trump administration was how far he was actually able to get with a lot of these things. He should have been able to achieve wrecking democracy, causing chaos within our federal branches as well as he did. But it's a testament to how little accountability it's appearing that our government's able to give to him, because we know never mind like all the laws it's looking like he's broken or attempted to break, all the precedent he doesn't care about, how steadfast he always is with things. Like, we know for a fact that he tries to tamper with investigations. Yep. He tries to install people who are loyal to him. So on the basis, wouldn't you try to make it so there isn't even the appearance of corruption? But no, just go, hey, I want to have a special master, a thing that I kind of just like pulled out of thin air that has no, doesn't have even need to have a precedent in this case to begin with. And I want this person to be able to look over the case and make a decision on, make key decisions on it. And this person's going to be my guy. And the government goes, all right, bet, that makes sense. You don't let the criminals choose the opposite side's members of their legal team. That doesn't make sense, even in like a cartoon, let alone a movie, let alone whatever we're calling American politics these days.
You're 100% right. And as we proceed, assuming that the guy gets confirmed, assuming that he does the work or whatever, and it isn't drawn out for 2 years, like for all we know, he'll put out a Bill Barr letter, you know, lying about what was in it or something. And at that point, we might forget about this particular story. But this is laying the groundwork for everything else that happens here, at least the next few steps of it. So an important story. It might seem inside baseball, I don't know, but it is obviously significant. And with that said, let's turn to one other, a little bit more fun aspect of Trump's legal troubles. Sean Hannity is a big fan of the political own goal. Take a look at his most recent one.
Witch hunt, the emoluments clause investigation from the House Oversight Committee, a House Ways and Means investigation into Trump's taxes, another House investigation into Trump's hotel lease, another House investigation into foreign gift disclosures, a D.C. probe into Trump's inauguration fundraising, another similar investigation from the Southern District of New York and the Eastern District of New York and from New Jersey's Attorney General, one impeachment investigation into a regular phone call with Ukraine, a second impeachment investigation into January 6th.
Yeah, that is a lot of alleged crimes that your guy committed. That is a lot of investigation. That is true, Hannity. Woo! You know, I got to give Hannity credit. He doesn't often teach us much because he doesn't know much to teach, but I had forgotten about quite a few of those massive scandals, Hannity. Thank you for reminding me in a very concise way of all of the things he's alleged to have done criminally. Dan, what do you think?
There's something really nice about seeing Sean Hannity kind of like read out the CVS receipt worth of Trump's crimes in a really concise manner. I mean, you got to give it to the guy. He's good at hosting, so to speak. But I mean, it's a little bit surprising. I think it's one of those moments, you know, Fox is on 24/7. Sometimes when I'm really sick or something like that, I'll just like watch Fox News because I'm at home and I have nothing else to do. And I'm like, oh, what the hey? Let's see how the middle half lives, so to speak. And it's so some of these things just kind of like go over your shoulder. Like you sometimes can get surprised what gets clipped out on social media based on what happens on Fox News, because much like the Trump administration, you can get so much whiplash from all the crazy things going on that you just become numb to the fact that, oh, wow, Sean Hannity just like actually admitted or like just said to all the things that any rational person should go, huh, it seems like I should disagree with Trump or should not be with this guy. But all things go to show that, if anything, Sean Hannity's making a risk out there by acknowledging the facts with his audience.
Yeah. Well, it also, it reminds me, I'm sure it reminds a lot of people of the time that he wanted to demonstrate how extreme and out of touch Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was. So he put her agenda over his shoulder, and it looked just, it just looked great. It was literally like, senior care for the elderly. I'm like, dude, I don't think you're proving the point you think you are here. I understand that you say like Green New Deal and your audience instinctively like flees under the covers or something, but a lot of that stuff just sounded good. And it almost makes me wonder, like, imagine if Sean Hannity had long ago gotten like, you know, like disillusioned with the right wing, and he strove for like a government that actually like cared for its people, but he's got a job to do. But he occasionally sends out like a little indication that he's a hostage at this point, and he does it in over the shoulder graphics. I want to imagine that universe. Anyway,
I would like to, but like, let's not give Sean Hannity any undue credit.
100%. And also, unfortunately, we've got a little bit more work for Hannity to do, because his team just put together all those scandals, and what do you know, a day goes by and he's got to update it, because the Justice Department has subpoenaed more than 30 people in Trump's orbit in the January 6th probe, including, by the way, seizing the phones of some top aides. We know a few of the names: Boris Epstein, Mike Roman. Both of them were involved in the fake electors scheme. Bernard Carrick was involved in the voter fraud claims with Rudy Giuliani. We know their phones have been taken by the committee to be looked into for the communications around January 6th. Others were not so sure, although if you read between the lines, you can figure out one person whose phone was probably taken, as you'll see in this video.
In the last week, the Justice Department has issued 40 subpoenas, seized two phones of Trump associates over January 6th. Your response to this less than 2 months before a midterm election?
Well,
they come after your phone, Steve?
That's the point, though, isn't it? I mean, it's been publicly reported that I was on the list of subpoenas in the New York Times. Okay. But that's the point, right? When are they doing this? Right before the midterms.
Like, totally cool with it if it was 6 months before the midterms or 9 months. It's the timing that really bothers them. She asked him if his phone had been taken, and he just kept talking over her. And then she did something that I didn't think biologically she was capable of. She repeated the question when it wasn't actually answered, and he just kept talking over her. You'll notice he didn't answer the question with words. I feel like he sort of answered it, though, Dan. I think his phone is taken.
Yeah, and I don't know. I kind of figured a little bit of, like, discomfort from Laura Ingraham there, because wasn't she and a number of other Fox News hosts like one of those people who were texting top Trump people mm-hmm. on January 6th, like, hey, y'all might want to tap the brakes here. Like, I always like to say, when it comes to propagandizing and sending the right wing into the kind of fervor that you saw on January 6th. Like, if that is the sauce, so to speak, Fox News is the sriracha factory. That's what I've been saying. Like, so they are used to giving this propaganda nonstop, like dishing it out, putting it on the top of everything. And even they on January 6th, January 7th, January 8th even, were starting to say, oh, wow, Trump may have done an oopsie here. There are some cops that have died, and we spent a lot of time going Blue Lives Matter, rah, rah, rah. So we might have to turn on Trump on this one. There's even that Mitch McConnell floater in the New York Times, I remember, that they always fall for, saying, okay, we might have to actually hold Trump accountable here. And, like, within a month, everyone in the Republican Party had completely switched on lockstep and decided, no, it was actually Antifa or whatever. But no, it's definitely really cautious here. I think Stephen Miller is giving a little bit of a tell. I hope that this leads to accountability. That's the thing that ultimately we need to see out of here.
100%. And perhaps our least likely, too. And as we transition to our break, I'm going to leave you just with one little thought. Either way, but especially if he had nothing on his phone, Think about how much they love making themselves victims. Why wouldn't he be enthusiastic about telling you his phone was taken? Think about it. It's an illegitimate investigation, and he didn't do anything wrong. So them taking his phone makes him look like the aggrieved party. Why did they do this to poor Stephen Miller? He would be yelling it. He would be rushing to tell them about how his phone was taken. And it looks like it was, but he doesn't want you to know. Why wouldn't he want you, or in theory, someone else, maybe a particular person, why wouldn't he want them to know that his phone had been taken? I'll leave you to think about that. We'll be right back. You want to see the power of a follow-up question? Take a look at Jared Kushner absolutely falling apart from mild pressure.
Why did the president take home top secret documents?
You have to ask him that question. But, you know, what I will say is if you look at my book, you'll see that he was under constant attack.
Took top secret documents home, potentially risking the security of the United States.
Yeah, I think that it's something that, again, this seems like it's an issue of paperwork that should have been able to be worked out between DOJ and him. I don't know what he took or what he didn't take, but I think right now we're relying on leaks to the media, which is the same thing
we've
that
we've
seen
the photograph, haven't we, where it says top secret.
Yeah, like I said, I've seen a lot of allegations made by the media over my 4 years that turned out not to be true. So I think that this whole thing is actually elevated.
So the fact that we've seen photographs that say top secret document, we should wait and see whether or not they were. Even though we're being told by the FBI that they were.
Yeah, like I said, I go into my book the accusations that were made of Trump.
If you could answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he was the president of the United States. He had the highest clearance in the world. So I don't know if this may be a paperwork issue. This may be, I don't know.
Look, I don't know what you want me to, look, I said the paperwork thing and then I had the thing about like they were big meanies to him for a while. Why won't you get off my back, mean woman? Stop asking me about it. Like maybe it's just a paperwork thing, you know, like when you rob a bank, it's just a paperwork issue of them wanting the bills back. Maybe that's what it is. You know, we're really just relying on leakers. Yeah, but the documents are right there. Are you asserting that he did not have those documents? I don't know. Maybe it's paperwork. None of this is convincing. And the thing is, I'm not familiar with that broadcaster, but if he was being interviewed in America, first of all, they probably wouldn't even ask the question because they wouldn't want to be rude to someone they want continuing access to. But even if they did, he would have done one of his asides to some BS that means nothing, that has nothing to do with the substance of it, and they would have moved on. But she didn't. And she didn't let him go on for 45 seconds to try to distract and then ask again. She cut in to ask the question, doing her actual job, Dan, and I loved it.
Yeah, there's a particular brand of video I like doing on here. I don't even know if this is fate again or having me on, but it is when right-wing grifters have to experience what it's like outside of the safe right-wing media ecosphere they love to be in, and they have to experience what actual questions are like in foreign press. I remember the famous Andrew Neil interview on BBC that comes to mind when Ben Shapiro just like squirmed completely to answering minor questions. But Jared Kushner here is so... He is very just showing his best Kendall Roy here, just being unable to answer questions. The guy from Succession, he's just like, it seems like a paperwork issue. Maybe cousin Greg misplaced some documents. I don't know. It's so funny to see this kind of thing. I also do love the B-roll they have, the zooming into Mar-a-Lago late at night with the helicopter pans going really fast. Just as a producer, great work there. But ultimately, I love to see good, solid questioning and interviewing. I'm not going to say that Sky News are heroes, so let's not even get into that conversation
now.
But it is very, very good to see that Jared Kushner actually getting some tough questions. Again, when we see accountability, that's the major like eye on the prize thing here.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I like the shot to Mar-a-Lago. I also liked when she's like, well, hold up. We saw the photos. Boom. They go to the photos like instantly. Like it's indisputable. I loved it. Great job on the part of the control room there. And I agree with your metaphor. It's like when you think you're Kendall Roy, but you're really cousin Greg, and neither would be good. Also, congrats to Succession for the Emmy. But anyway, yeah, like like Kendall Roy would go on there and then be mad because you're not asking questions about his like new rap video. Like Jared just wants to be asked about a stupid book that nobody cares about. Like, no, I seriously, if you look in my book, I'm not going to look in your book. Literally nobody's going to look in your book. Don't worry, you'll sell some because right-wing think tanks are going to buy up like 50,000 copies to make you a bestseller and no one's going to read it. But we didn't bring you on to talk about your book and nobody cares about your book. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump to something very different? We're actually going to get to the D block, okay? Maybe it was fate all along. Starbucks has announced some new benefits for their workers. Sorry, some of their workers, not their workers in union stores. We saw this tweet from Reuters. Starbucks announced new student loan repayment tools and a savings account program for all U.S. employees who are not union members. Okay, and this is, of course, happening with the backdrop of many Starbucks stores unionizing. Now, what's awesome about this news is they are giving a benefit to their non-union employees literally like 2 weeks after the NLRB said that they're illegally withholding wages and benefits from union workers. They apparently decided, like, we can do whatever the hell we want. What is the NLRB going to do? We'll double down and give more benefits just to the non-union workers. By the way, like, that's the big issue. But if you actually dive into what these new benefits are, I remain not that enthused about it. The My Starbucks Savings will be able, they'll let their workers contribute a portion of after-tax pay on a recurring basis from their paycheck to a personal savings account. And the company will contribute $25 and $50 credits at what they call key saving milestones up to a total of $250. So to be clear, it's you giving your money from your paycheck to a savings plan, and if you do it enough over a long enough period of time, they'll give you $250. Hold your applause, please. I don't think that's that amazing. And then there's this tool they're giving people to help them manage and optimize student loan repayments. What the hell does that even mean? It's like a web app so you won't forget to send in your payment? How does that actually help with the crushing burden of student loan debt? I see no answers to any of those things. But the bigger issue, obviously, is they are trying to scare workers out of unionizing by implying that if you want these benefits and, hey, maybe future benefits, you damn sure shouldn't unionize your store, Dan.
Yeah, I remember maybe Starbucks wasn't the place, but maybe at least competitive coffee shops offer, or at least in the past have offered, programs where they will contribute much more than $250 to a barista's tuition, or because they actually believe that, you know, I believe the theory that, oh, a Starbucks job or even any fast food job is just something that you make as an entry-level job. You pass through college. It's so-called unskilled labor. That's a high-level economics term that I think is very poorly, has very bad connotations, and we need to get rid of that entirely. The reality is in the society that a lot of people find that they are at service jobs like Starbucks for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And unless we start taxing rich people more, like the CEO of Starbucks or any of those people more, we're going to start having to provide people with better services at the lower levels. That comes from raising the minimum wage. That comes from the situations you have right now where it's really competitive for restaurant employees and employers to attain workers. And so that's actually a good thing. It's really funny that they are offering this petty thing for non-union workers when they used to offer full-on like college tuition, or like at least competitive coffee shops can do that. So not only is it a slap in the face to the unions, it's giving non-union members crumbs to begin with, which is a tried and true tactic of union busting.
Exactly. Yeah. When you could, like, we see the direction this is going, and definitely don't make the mistake of thinking that, like, these successful unionization campaigns are inevitable, even in companies where they have been having a lot of success. Nothing's inevitable, and Starbucks is fighting back as hard as they can, but it definitely looks like that's the direction it's going in. And so if you're a Starbucks, you could spend a bunch of money trying to stop it and making yourself look absolutely terrible along the way, or what if you actually embraced it? What if you like tried a little bit? Like, think about the goodwill that you could accrue by not appearing to be viciously hostile to unionization that is happening anyway. I don't know what the dollar value on that is, but I feel like it'll buy you more than a little bit of like giving the $250 will. Like, you really think that's going to generate the goodwill that actually embracing your workers and young activists will? I don't know. I guess they're smarter than me. Certainly they make more money, I guess. Anyway, with that said, we're going to go to a social break, I think. Maybe. We're going to try. We're going to see how it goes. And then we got a couple more stories with Dan, and there are a lot of funds that don't go anywhere. Okay, with that, let's have a little bit of insanity, and then it's going to get even crazier, but we're going to start with this.
People not to wear a bra. Hey, if you're body shaming, don't touch me. Hey, all my followers.
Kill me! Can you stop? Stop! Stop!
Get her away from me.
No, you get away.
You guys, I'm being attacked right now. And none of these people. This lady is attacking me right now. It's my phone! It's my personal belonging!
So there's no reason, nothing that justifies a Karen harassing someone, let alone physically assaulting them. But of all of the reasons that don't merit it, being enraged that in a public park, a woman is choosing not to wear a bra seems like the worst possible explanation for that. But that's what you're seeing there. The video that you're seeing is being recorded by an indigenous Ottawa-based woman. It's now gone viral. Her name's Laura, saying that this attack began because the woman was enraged about her lack of wearing a bra. So much so that she would yell at her, attack her multiple times, and then crawl on the hood of a vehicle. Dan, we've seen a lot of crazy behavior from Karens, but I feel like this one stands out.
This is just really scary because, you know, a lot of Karen behavior is just very cringe. It's just like, oh, don't do that. Oh, just, you know, the phone is out. Don't double down. Don't triple down. Don't KFC quadruple down right now. Just please stop. Don't make the situation worse than it needs to be, please. But they necessarily do that. This is a situation where, unfortunately, it gets dangerous because you're seeing the culture that is pervasive in a lot of societies, not just America's, that's increasingly becoming more puritanical, that's increasingly becoming more, conservative and showing its male-dominated roots, where it's like, oh, you're running in the park and not like wearing a bra. Like, that's insulting to me somehow. That's insulting to my kids who are probably not even paying attention. Like, the fact that you're now like drawing attention to this person and chasing them down and drawing on the hood of their car, the kid's going to remember that a lot more. And they're going to be like, mommy, why are you so upset about that? What was it about that woman? What was it about what that woman was wearing that made you jump onto the hood of the car? And now I'm seeing all your videos on the internet. Like, now you just did the Barbra Streisand effect on yourself. There's nothing the kid can do but ask, why did this happen? Why did this start? And, you know, there's going to be some interesting answers if this kid continues to go down that rabbit hole of really why she's doing that.
100%. You're kidding. You're going to forget that. I love the idea of the Barbra Streisand effect for Karens. It's totally true. Like, she understands the PR implications of this, by the way. That's why she's trying to get the woman's phone. I got news for you. Stop attacking her and limit the damage in that way. Maybe that's a good idea. Anyway, police were called. They looked into the assaults. There were charges laid against the woman. She was later released from custody on a promise to appear in court. She seems trustworthy to me, so I wouldn't even worry about that. Here's an interesting little last-minute curve to the story, though. I saw a message. I apologize. I can't credit you by name, but I just happened to see a message about the law in Ottawa. Do you know it is legal for women to go fully topless? So again, freaking out about whether a woman chooses to wear a bra or not, even less justified in that particular case. And I will continue to advocate for a policy wherein when you go outside, don't talk to anyone. Just go wherever you're going. When you leave the building you're in, just travel to the next building. Don't interact with anyone. Don't film anyone. Don't give anyone reason to film you. And we can avoid a lot of this needless trouble.
One thing being extremely on the internet has taught me is never give your enemies content.
100%. And that is what they're doing. It literally is just making yourself and your awfulness into the story. And it was weird at the beginning. I don't know, 2019, 2020, when did Karen videos start to be big? It's the idea that years into that, people would still choose to become a Karen. Like, you've seen all those warnings. You got to know that when the situation starts, it's got to be in the back of your mind. But you still choose to go full Karen. I don't understand it. Anyway, with that said, we got one more story to talk about with the limited time that we have with Dan. And out of everything in the world of politics and social commentary that we could possibly talk about, we chose to talk about chicken, okay? Because I appreciate a good chicken sandwich. What I don't appreciate is a bad chicken sandwich restaurant. And we've got an example in this case. What do you do on Twitter? Well, I don't know, you follow like celebrity news, you tweet awful things occasionally, and you advocate for what you want. And Don chose to do that. Don tweeted out a funny gif of a cow with big googly eyes saying, grilled spicy deluxe, but still no spicy nuggets at Chick-fil-A. And that's what you do. You advocate for what you want. And they chose to respond to that, Chick-fil-A did, saying, your community will be the first to know if spicy items are added to the permanent menu, Don. And many people responded the same way that I'm responding now. Why did you word it that way? Of all of the things you could say, why did you say your community will know? Dan, we're going to get to their response. You're very online. You tweet to people. I'm sure you think about the way that you word things. Why?
In defense of Chick-fil-A, they said they were going to be adding spicy menu items. That was quite a spicy menu item right there. I bet you didn't think I was going to start with that, did you?
No. That was a spicy nugget of a tweet.
Yeah, no, but definitely it begs the question, what's next?
Oh, no. What is next?
Do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
100%. Well, look, here's their response. They say the response was a poor choice of words, but was not intended in any way to be insensitive or disrespectful. We often use the term community in a broader sense to talk about places where we operate restaurants and serve the surrounding community. Okay. As responses go, I think that that's a somewhat clever one. I don't know how often they use the word community, but what I would say is if you mean like about a certain area where we have restaurants, what are you implying, Chick-fil-A? Do you know where Don lives? How the hell do you know what community he's a part of? How do you know if you have Chick-fil-A's in that area? Chick-fil-A ain't everywhere. I know a lot of people complain about that because they want that sweet, sweet chicken, but it's not everywhere. So what the hell are you talking about? Now, look, I don't doubt that. It's not like they woke up and they were like, we're going to stick it to that community or whatever. But it clearly wasn't the right way to communicate it. And furthermore, if you're going to do this, and if you're going to have to do damage control, could you treat Don like a person? Because while they did put out this response, they apparently did not respond to Don. He tweeted out a photo of all of these updates saying, not them making statements, but didn't reach out to me at Chick-fil-A. Crazy. Could you talk to the guy that you offended of all people rather than just putting out like a generic corporate response semi-apology?
How new is Chick-fil-A to this, all right? First of all, when you're extremely online and you threaten a company, which just inevitably happens when you're extremely online, celebrity or otherwise, because of poor service or whatever, A, you reach out to them publicly, so there's a public record of you knowing that. B, you DM them privately, so you make sure you actually resolve the issue. If you want to be like one of those companies, we are a family type workplaces, then say, hey, we'll be telling our community or the community sooner. But your community, you have to know that implies something, especially with the connotations of, I mean, we know Chick-fil-A's connotations with the LGBTQ plus community. And so by saying your community and like othering them in that sense, like there's a lot of connotations there. There's connotations with the Black community. And of course it being a largely fried chicken establishment, even though they're talking about grilled chicken, again, once again, defense of Chick-fil-A. So coming from the vegetarian. So like in the most tepid defense of Chick-fil-A I could possibly give, meat is murder. But like the, ultimately here, this is just not a good look for Chick-fil-A. Hopefully their social media expert gets a good talking to about tone on the internet.
100%. And in the meantime, because that's specific to the intern, but now you've done this thing, send a message to Don, seriously. I don't know what you do beyond that, but I don't know, consider, what if you were to launch Spicy Nuggets? What if this controversy accomplished Don's original goal and got Spicy Nuggets made? I don't care. I don't eat spicy nuggets.
Call him Don's Nuggets for your community. Just play it off.
Spicy community nuggets. It's spicy for all of the people in the spice community that enjoy a heated chicken experience.
People of spice, if you will.
Oh my God. Anyway, I will say that like I had been thinking about trying to push for, I want an extreme cinnamon Pop-Tart, but I don't want to message Pop-Tarts now because I'm worried that they'll say something like anti-Italian or something. Like, what are they going to say now? Like, I'm a little bit worried about it. Anyway, I remember when I tweeted at Ben and Jerry's mad that they had gotten rid of their cinnamon roll ice cream, and they lied to me on Twitter and said it was still available. I'm still stung by that. I'm not ready to engage with the corporation again.
I'm so thankful, John, that I'm finally hearing someone who's likes the non-chocolatey Ben and Jerry's flavors, because I do like the chocolate ones here and there, but I love a good gimme s'more here or there, which is a little bit chocolatey, but it's mostly the cinnamon base. There's like a cinnamon swirl one that's also very good. I don't dabble a lot in ice cream very much just because of like how it makes my stomach feel. But I usually don't go for the super chocolatey ones. They're always super over with the chocolate Ben and Jerry's. I say, no, let's don't just give us vanilla and strawberry shortcake. We are people too. We are people too.
Exactly. Yeah, a little bit of peanut butter, a little bit of caramel. That's the direction I want to go in. Anyway, unfortunately, that is all the time we have with Dan. Dan, thank you as always for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everyone, check out Dan's work. You got Power Report. When's the next episode of one of your shows coming out that they can go check out?
Oh, yeah. Next Power Report, we're streaming Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I might be able to have Yasmin Aaliyah Khan on.
Oh,
and
awesome.
If not, I'll have one of my, general guests. Or I'll just do it myself. A little Glenn Beck-style monologue where I'll break out a chalkboard and have, dark lighting and we'll talk about feelings.
Like it. Okay, everyone, check that out. That is it for the first hour. The aftermath is coming, and we've got some major stories to jump into, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this. Pop-Tart Dragon sent in a super chat saying, I recently got a speeding ticket, but I'm fighting it in court on account of the fact that we're less than 60 days from an election and it's clearly a partisan attack. Nice. 100%. Like, they're stretching it to everything. Look, you want to say investigating a particular candidate 60 days before an election is a partisan thing? Okay, you can say that. That's fine. They stretch it to, investigating Trump when someday he might be a candidate. That's a stretch. And then, Stephen Miller's phone being taken, that's an election attack. He's not a candidate. Literally because he does something involved in politics, that's enough. It's ridiculous how the goalposts move. Anyway, Dalaquan says in the members' comments, why do the tough questions always come with a British accent? Yeah, they do seem to be a little bit tougher in terms of their investigations. They're follow-up questions, don't they?
It's a media culture there, but that doesn't necessarily have to be the case.
Yeah. Groove Dragon says, John, tweet to Starbucks with that wonderful commentary. I just might. I'm not worried about angering Starbucks. I don't like their coffee, and I'm not going to drink their Frappuccinos. I have liked some of their egg dishes, and their cake pops were perfectly fine. But other than that, I really have nothing to lose by burning that bridge. I'm more of a coffee bean and tea leaf guy, I guess.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.